Welcome to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
And you're darn tootin' on that one. Welcome to another edition of Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. I'm Harry Alexander, Bunker de France across the way, way over there.
No, I'm not.
And way in Los Angeles, our good friend Todd Roberts. Howdy.
Howdy. We're loving our life here in Los Angeles, here on the West Coast.
Yep.
Between Governor Newsom and
Newsom.
And
I think
and
I just
Mayor Bass
up.
And yeah. It's a very interesting time. They have 4,500 homes for permits that have been submitted for rebuilding. And they've gotten to 38 so far.
Bureaucracy in action. Not. Anyway, yeah. We got us a good one lined up for you today. You all remember the actor Kenny Rogers. He was also a musician, singer, country, pop, all kinds of genres. We got his son, Kenny Rogers Jr., on the horn with us. We certainly do. But
talent in his own right.
He is. We just learned that he loves classic automobiles. So we're definitely going to talk about that today.
Yeah.
So you got some Bunker Bovine stuff there?
Yes, I do. Before I get to the bovine, I want to just remind everybody, coming up Saturday, July 26th, is the National Day of the Cowboy. And down at the Empire Ranch, they like to invite everybody to come on down and have a good time and celebrate our national heritage and the cowboy. And also point out that is a national holiday.
It is, yes.
So, you know, put your patriotic hat on and, get with it and your boots. Anyhow, it's the National Day of the Cowboy. It's a day of trail rides, exhibitors, music, and history. It'll be featuring musician Jay Faircloth and cowgirl poet Maria Eastman. You can come down, enjoy, and explore. There'll be trail rides, ranch house tours, western vendors, and demos. The trail rides is going to be they're scheduled. Every 45 minutes, they'll start at 8 a.m., 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 11 a.m., 12 a.m.
And
I should say, because I forgot this part, but it's from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., so you can kind of come down there, beat most of the heat, because it's cooler down there than it is here in Tucson. But for the trail rides, the pre-registration is required. Now, there will be hamburgers and hot dog lunch available, and they may also be purchased in advance. That sounds kind of creepy to, email a reservation for a hot dog. That's great. Anyhow, this will all be taken, and like I said, be taking place at the Empire Ranch Foundation, which is located on the Las Cienegas National Conservation Area, just outside of Sonoyta, Arizona. Come on down. Put your hat and your boots on and get your scoot on down. Now, coming to you from Bunker's Bunkhouse, the good, the bad, and the bovine. Now, I'll explain. I do this every week, so you're probably tired of hearing it. But what I do is I start with today, being the 12th of July. I go back 3 days in time and 3 days forward in time. And this is a Western Cowboy time travel show. Anyhow, we're going to go back and start out with July 9th, 1846. The United States takes San Francisco from Mexico. I wish we'd have just left it with them.
I guess there are a lot of people who would share that.
And anyhow, on the 10th of July in 1913, Death Valley hits highest temperature on recorded on Earth of 137 degrees Fahrenheit.
Goodness.
Man, that's enough to fry eggs.
Dragon.
Now, on the 11th of July, 1914, Babe Ruth makes his major league debut as a starter with the Boston Red Sox. That's for you, Harry.
He was a pitcher at that time.
Good pitcher, too. On today...
He used to go out, get drunk, come back, pitch the next day. Hey. None of this on the disabled list garbage that they pulled today.
Well, it's just like the old boxers back then.
Yep.
You know, they'd go out there, get drunk, get in a fight the night before the big fight. You know,
that's what
kind
you do.
Kind of a warm-up. Now... Today, actually it's today, but it's in 1630. New Amsterdam governor buys Gull Island from Indians with cargo from a ship, I guess. It's one cargo. Renames it Oyster Island. Later on, it becomes known as Ellis Island. I don't know if that's the one that legend says they bought it with beads.
No, that was Manhattan.
That's Manhattan. But, you know, the funny thing, the Indians that sold Manhattan, they were just passing through. They didn't own it. That's the truth. They were just passing through. Oh, you want to give us beads for islands? Good.
It's always good to find a dumb white man.
Yes, it is. Now, moving into the future, on the 13th of July in 1831, Nathan Bedford Forrest, Confederate general, was born in Chapel Hill, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That's for all you Rebs out there.
He was a fantastic general well.
He was.
I don't care what anybody says.
You want to add some stuff to that?
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, I like to hear this.
Everybody who thinks the Confederate generals were all bad.
Well, they were the best.
No, they were not. Many of them were graduates of West Point. Many of them fought in the Mexican-American War under, who was the commanding general there? Winfield Scott.
Yeah.
I don't care what you say. They were great generals. They lost. You know, hey, that happens.
The thing is, you're 100% right. The Union had a problem finding decent. They finally got lucky with Grant and Sherman.
Yes.
But up until then, McClellan.
McClellan was a wussy. He would refuse to attack, and this guy also wanted to be president.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
And you know, the funny thing is. The only reason, you know, I'm not taking sides, but the only reason the South won the war is that the
The North won the war.
That's what I said. Did I say that?
You said the South.
Well, they should have won, but I'm not taking sides.
Anyway.
Anyhow, now we'll move on up to the 14th in 1881. This is for all you New Mexico people out there. It was the death of Billy the Kid.
Mm.
Or was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bishy Bob.
Mm-hmm.
The 15th, we'll finish up with the 15th of July, 1806. The Pike Expedition, led by Lieutenant Zebulon Pike, begins exploration of the Southwest. And that's all the bovine BS I got for you.
Lots of bovine there, I'm sure.
Don't step in the boat.
Let's not. Let us welcome to the program here, Kenny Rogers, Jr. Sir, how you doing?
He's still with us?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We be fine over this way. And, you know, I do want to get into classic cars with you because it's a favorite topic of mine. But let's talk about who you are. And obviously we know you're the son of Kenny Rogers, but who are you?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, aren't you Kenneth Ray Rogers the second?
You know, there's a funny story about that. So many years ago, I would say about 10 years ago, my father had someone run a genealogy test on him, and they are genealogy checked. They went through some records and not like the DNA thing, but following some records. And he had it delivered to his house one day, and he looks at the cover, and it says, genealogy trace for Kenneth Donald Rogers. And he thinks, I paid for this, and they immediately got it wrong. So he contacts the woman who did it and said, this says Kenneth Donald Rogers on it. She said, yeah, that's your name. He goes, that is absolutely not my name. My name is Kenneth Ray Rogers. She said, well, I don't think so. So they did some searching around. And they found out that my father's birth name was Kenneth Donald Rogers.
Huh.
So his whole life he'd been Kenneth Ray Rogers. And and he's like, where did this come from? So he called one of his sisters, who was still alive at the time, and said, hey, why is it that I think my middle name is Ray, and it turns out my middle name is Donald? And she said, well, Mama called everybody that. Billy Ray, Tommy Ray, Kenny Ray. It was just a nickname. He's like, wait a second. And you got to remember, he grew up, I mean, he was born in 38. So it was an era when getting identification in some places was as simple as just filling out the form.
Yeah.
So he wasn't somewhere along the line, maybe in school or something, Kenneth Ray surfaced, and that became his name. So he doesn't even know when it happened. It would have been when he was maybe even in grade school.
Wow.
So technically, I'm Kenneth Ray Rogers the First, but he did legally, as soon as he found out, he legally changed his name to Kenneth Ray Rogers. And I said, well, technically, that makes you the second. And I said, we need to negotiate something out here because, yeah, you're taking my name right now. So
that's funny.
Well, in that case, you should be getting his royalty checks.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our negotiation was that I get nothing for it, and then I go back to being Kenneth Ray Rogers the second. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
That is excellent. But you're a musician and a composer in your own right. You've got a couple of tunes out available at Amazon.com, I'm positive.
I do?
And
I do. Okay. Yeah. That I didn't know about. No, most of my work was television composing. I did a lot of TV show themes and bumpers and underscore and throughout the 90s especially.
You do any westerns?
Yeah, I do get royalties from that. I'm sorry?
You do any westerns? Composing?
You know, I did work on a few. I worked on some very low-budget westerns from a guy who was a filmmaker who was trying to get his feet on the ground. And then I got called in as a late fill-in on the Fifth Gambler movie, which was a lot of fun. So I got to score a good percentage of that. I got to do some really fun, like, authentic Western stuff. A lot of just acoustic guitar and fiddle kept it real organic, real simple. It was a lot of fun.
How many instruments?
So I did do that.
How many instruments do you play?
How many instruments do I play well, or do I play? Because those are two different questions.
Well, that's very true.
Both.
Well, as a composer, I kind of play most everything. I mean, without including like orchestral instruments like oboes and trumpets. But I everyone plays them better than I do. I am the proverbial jack of all trades and master of none. But I basically play things good enough to show the really great people what I would like to have happen, and then they step in and do the real work. So, and then I take credit for it. So it's a great job.
Hey, why not?
Well, yeah, as long as you get paid.
So how difficult is it to score a television movie or television program or a movie for that matter?
Well, you know, it has a lot to do with the director. I was very fortunate, especially since we're talking about Gambler 5, the director was named Jack. He went on to do the Lost series. He's a really great director. And I was very fortunate to work with him. He's very focused, really knew what he wanted. So the first stage of any film thing is you sit down with the director and you watch the movie with no score, and you'll have a time code running at the bottom, and you'll take notes, and the director will say, I want the music to start here, and I want it to do this and this, and then have it do this and that. And then the director and composer kind of discuss it and figure out what would be a good feel, and what's called spotting, figuring out where the music comes in and goes out. And then it's really up to the composer to try and match what the director wants. And when you're composing, you're either playing to the emotion, I'm going to rephrase that, you are playing to the emotion in the scene. Sometimes it's not always the dialogue. Sometimes people are saying things that are concealing what they feel. And you, as the composer, your job is to play what they're feeling and not what they're saying. So it can be very interesting. It'd be a lot of fun
Wow.
Did you ever do any, like, tom-tom music for the Indians?
Not too many Indians in the stuff I've scored. I'm sure now you've got me thinking because there's so much stuff back in there.
What about Gary Owen for the cavalry?
I think I did a cavalry charge in something. I don't recall exactly what it was. Right. Like I said, I did a lot of low budget westerns for these guys who were really trying to get their careers off the ground. So, and they were easy to work with, of course, but I remember a cavalry charge in there. I don't think they did much in the way of Indians.
Todd Roberts, get in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kenny, I have to ask you, when you're drawn to your dad because you love him and you want to be with him and you want to work with him, but then at the same time, you're also trying to go out and do your own thing and make your own mark and blaze your own trail and so forth. I know that and I understand it because I've dealt with it myself with my own dad in the entertainment industry. Some handle this struggle better than others. How is it you were able to handle it, obviously, better than so many other people I know?
Well, first of all, thank you for that compliment that I was able to handle it better. Well, I think several reasons. One, I'm not a big fan of children of celebrities because they tend to try and kind of glom on and take credit for things that really had nothing to do with them. Mm-hmm. So seeing that in other people, seeing other children, celebrities, and finding out I don't respect that, helped me determine how I felt about it. I realized, okay, that's his world, and this is mine. And then also recognizing that what's true of parents in the entertainment business is true of parents in, you know, car sales or plumbing or whatever. If there's a man who's been a plumber forever and he wants his son to take over the business, maybe the son does have an affinity for it. There is that generational conflict that exists there. So it's not so much a unique thing to entertainment. And in fact, I think it, you know, I think you can go back millennia, and I know you can. And there's so many stories of, I mean, every, you follow the line of British royalty and there's tons of stories of my dad and having living up to that and some surpassing and some, you know, falling short. And it goes back thousands and thousands of years. And I'm sure at every level, the tanner in some local town, you know, probably had the same issue with his dad. So I think he just recognized that it's just a common constant generational thing. And you just kind of stick to who you are, you know, and believe in who you are and don't try to attach yourself to someone else and be that person. Because there's no one, no matter how hard I try and tried, I would never have supplanted Kenny Rogers. You know, he is who he is. He was who he was. He did what he did. There's never been anyone like that before or since, and nor should there be. And at any effort, I'm only going to be a pale comparison. So better to just do my own thing and be my own person.
Yeah, an icon is an icon, and leave it that way.
That's a good way to look at things. Definitely. We got to do our first commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Our guest is Kenny Rogers Jr., and we're talking all kinds of things here, his career, and talk about his dad a bit here. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, and Todd Roberts with you. We will be back with much more right after these important messages. Do not run away.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and a hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club is one of the best-kept economic secrets in town. This 900-member group maintains one of the finest shotgun shooting ranges in the country, featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and sporting clays fields, and hosts national and international events that bring thousands of people and millions of dollars into our community. The Spring Satellite Grand American Tournament alone involves 1,200 participants for 10 days. Learn more about this and their other contributions to our community at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com.
26 men, carefully chosen for their courage and ability, formed the Arizona Rangers. Fame and public acclaim was not their objective. This is perhaps why the story of these 26 men has never been told until now.
This is the Voices of the West. troubles on the old Chisholm Trail. Come and tie, yippee, yippee, come and tie, yippee, yippee.
We are back on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France. In Los Angeles, it is Todd Roberts. And in the California area, it is our guest, Kenny Rogers Jr. And bring it on.
Yeah. Hey, Kenny, one of the movies that you composed on is one of my favorite movies. That's Riders in the Storm. You got any good stories about that one?
You remember that one? Do I have any good stories about it? I don't have too many bad stories in life. I choose not to keep those handy. The funny thing is the filmmakers were mostly Englishmen, and their concept of the West was pretty amusing. So they gave me a free hand. Basically, when I went in, I started talking about this old time, and they were like, oh, he must know what he's doing. So they just gave me a free hand. So I did. Every time I saw them, I lay down the Texas accent and just talk. Well, I'm working on this thing with a guitar, and they like, oh, well, it sounds lovely. I'm sure they'd be terrific. So it was a lot of fun. A slightly funny story about that is I ran into a guy once in a shopping mall in Los Angeles, which is where I am, and I ran up to him, and I was talking to him because I knew him, and it didn't occur to me until he was staring at me stunned that he was in that movie, and we had never actually met. Wow. But I had been seeing his face every day for about 6 weeks, and I thought, oh, I know this guy. And yeah, so, but no, that was a lot of fun. That was a fun Western
movie. That was a fun movie.
Well, who wants to go next? Somebody.
Oh, well, go. Okay, well, let's talk about another movie then. Pacino is Missing. It's a quirky little movie.
That was a funny thing. In L.A., there's a rule that we have in the industry, and I imagine, and you know what, it applies to every place I've ever been when it comes to entertainment or even any industry, is it's not so much the people with the great ideas, it's the people who get things done. Mm-hmm. And I had a very good friend at the time, a man named Eric Geller, and Eric would come up with crazy movie ideas, and then he would be making them, and I just loved that about him. He's like, oh, I got an idea. And it was just insane idea, just out of nowhere. And then he would call me 3 weeks later. Do you want to be in my movie? I'm like, sure, Eric, I'll do that. So so that was one of those movies. I was in it. I played, I believe, a studio executive. And then I scored it as well. And needless to say, every scene I'm in had fantastic music. So I just made sure of that.
Which was better, your acting or your music?
I'm sorry?
Which was better, the acting or the music?
Wow, that's tough to say. I mean, they're all kind of, you know, I haven't won any awards for either. I started off as an actor when I was very young, 9, 10 years old. And so I imagine I learned a few things there. Boy, it's tough to say. Let me look at my awards on the shelves. Oh, there aren't any, so that tells me nothing.
Yeah, Todd probably hawked them for you.
That's where they went. Yes, someone more deserving took them home. Well, it's fine. I'll tell you one fun Western story is years ago, my dad did a movie. I can't remember the name of it. But
Rio Diablo?
Rio Diablo, yes, thank you. And wow, all right. And a friend of mine was producing it, and I just strange way to backdoor into my dad's movie. But there weren't any parts in it for me. And he's like, I'll make you a part. So he wrote me a part. And we shot that at Alamo Village out in Brackettville, where I got to stay for a couple of weeks, which I believe is closed now, which is unfortunate. But if you guys know about, I assume you know about the great Alamo Village that John Wayne built.
Yes.
And what an experience that was, because the sets were authentic and functional inside and out. Wow. So if you went into the jail, there were actual cells in the jail. And when you went into the Alamo, it was the Alamo in the interior, the little Western town, the little Mexican town. And talk about the authentic feeling
Didn't need a soundstage.
Not at all, no. And there was no such thing there. I mean, everything was on location, so to speak. Wow. And it was so authentic that we stayed, all the actors and crew stayed at the military base, which was right down the road. And I had a horse named Denny that I rode. I was in the posse, and I chased the bad guys around. And eventually they just gave me Denny. I just take him back over there. So I would just ride Denny around on the set all day, and I'd ride Denny back over the old wigwam. And Yeah, or I'd sleep and I'd tie him up at the hotel, and there was a guy who came by and took care of him. It was fun. Wow. But
cool. He's kind of hung back in the saddle again.
The down part of it was, because I didn't actually fire my gun, they gave me a rubber replica, and that just didn't feel right. But I'd draw that six gun or whip out my Winchester, and it was just
That's just only good. It only works on rubber Indians.
If you swing it at them, you can't shoot them.
Todd, get in there.
So, you know, Kenny, I have to ask myself, when I'm watching your dad's films, he obviously had a well of creativity. I mean, you made five Gamblers.
Right.
Six if you count the two parter.
Right, and they're on television. So we know notoriously, you know, the networks love to, you know, look up and go, oh, we don't need another one of those. But they keep coming back to him and wanting him to do it. Where did that inspiration come for him?
The inspiration to do The Gambler, I don't know where it, obviously from the song originally, the great Don Schlitz wrote that song. And it really launched Don's career as well. But I don't know where the first one exactly came from. But what did happen, which was really, I think, what made them enthusiastic about it, is it was one of the few very American pieces that had international appeal. Those TV shows not only did well in the United States, they did well in Europe, they did really well in foreign markets from people who knew who he was and were just interested in seeing him in a show. And then it had that very, very Western, obviously, very Western feel to it. So that was a big... You know, it ain't show friends, it's show business. Mm-hmm. So these networks were looking for ways to make money, and that was a no-fail option with the Gambler movies. They knew they could take them to Europe and to Asian markets, and they would do very well over there as well.
Yeah, he was
one of my favorite ones was the one that had all of the old TV actors doing guest parts. That was a fun one to watch.
Yeah. That was fun, yeah. Chuck Connors up on the Rock, that was great.
The career of Bruce Boxleitner in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he had Scarecrow and Mrs. King, but I know Bruce always gave credit to the Gambler movies. And I know that was, having been on the set on several of them and you know, become good friends with Bruce, that's the look of a man who is surprised he's getting paid to have this much fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, nobody remembers him in How the West Was Won, the TV series, but they all remember The Gambler.
We had Bruce on the show some time back, and that's a great description of him.
Yeah. And he loves the Western.
Well, you know, I remember, you know, you talk about your dad's international appeal. I remember playing his hit... I'm going to date myself here with the first edition, just dropped in to see what condition my condition's in. And, of course, that has been used as music for The Big Lebowski, one of my favorite movies. And golly, what was that? 1960,
you know, Lucille was a good seducing song. I used to use that on Girls.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're
my
not
dad
married.
Used to do a great thing in his shows where he would run a video on the back on the screen of himself singing it back in the day with his really long hair and his glasses. But he and the band would do it live, synced up to that.
Wow.
And then he would stop the song and then he would read the lyrics to the audience. And he would say, I don't know if you appreciate the genius of these lyrics. I pushed my soul in a deep dark hole and then I followed it in.
Yep.
I watched myself crawling out as I was a crawling in. It's so funny. Because you really got to, you know, they don't write lyrics like that anymore.
No, they don't.
That's like Steve Allen. Remember, he used to do that with the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was
a good one. You know, I don't know if you guys ever had a chance to see my dad play live, but he really was, and I say this not because of, but in spite of being his son, really probably one of the greatest stage performers. And a lot of people came and said that to me. Garth Brooks said that when he did the speech bringing my dad into the Country Music Hall of Fame. He said mm-hmm. this, if there was a university of entertainment, Kenny Rogers would be the dean and the top professor.
Wow.
And the way I asked my dad years later, I said, how did you get so good at that? And he said, well, first of all, I recognize that people don't come to hear my music. They come to have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up playing in jazz trios and playing in all kinds of different bands and the New Christy Minstrels and the First Edition. And then when I was very young, in the early 70s, he used to do 3 weeks every year in Vegas, back when Vegas was a desert wasteland with a hotel every mile. And he would play like the Tumbling Dice Lounge in the Thunderbird or something.
Wow.
But the great part about it is we would go see every show in town. And that was not only the bigs, Sinatra and Jerry Lewis and Elvis, but we would also go see Lonnie Shore and Tony Fields and Red Fox and all of these comedians. And he would cull from the shows he saw. And he would realize, you know, if I say these jokes on my thing, and he ended up doing, when you would see his show live at the peak of his career and from that point on, it was about 50% stand-up comedy.
Hmm.
And I think that's really what made him so interesting and so appealing.
He studied Sinatra, because Sinatra did that constantly. When you listen to the album Sinatra Live at the Sands in 66, he's the funniest I've ever heard him. He says he could be a comedian. And that's very insightful of your dad to see that. That's really interesting.
Well, you know, speaking of the
he saw it working, and he knew that this is what people wanted to see. It showed them a good time. And so I'm sure, you know, Steve Allen, Sinatra, you know, Lonnie Shore, I'm sure a lot of people were going like, hey, that's my joke, man. But too late. He's got it in his record.
Milton Berle, the singers.
Milton Berle would always steal everybody's jokes.
Well, you know, you were talking about doing 3 weeks in Las Vegas. I also understand he used to do 3 weeks at Disneyland. And I'm imagining you at Disneyland for 3 weeks on your own.
Oh, well, imagine away, because those were blissful days for a young kid. He would have to show up, and back then I didn't appreciate how hard my dad worked, so he would show up at noon, and we'd have to leave the house at like 11, we'd get there at noon, and he would go to this backstage entrance, and he would play on the stage that rises up in Tomorrowland, that comes up out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go there, and he would say, you meet me back here at midnight, so he'd do 12 hours, and I'm sure he had lunch and so on, but he was there for 12 solid hours.
Oh, boy.
He goes, you meet me back here at midnight, or I'm leaving you here.
Uh-huh.
And every night I'm thinking, I'm not going to come back. Tonight's about it. I'm going to stay here. Yeah. But I was 8 or 9, and I'd chicken out every time. But, no, it was wonderful. Just being able to run free range.
Hmm? Yeah.
How many times did you ride Mr. Toad's Wild Ride?
I think the amount of times I was on any ride is beyond human comprehension. These are numbers that are no longer in mathematics. They got to the point, I'd say it got to the point where some of the rides, there was a ride I loved as a kid called Adventures Through Inner Space. It was Monsanto's science ride, and it was about shrinking into a snowflake.
Uh-huh.
And I was on it so many times, it got to the point where the guy would see the cart come around, and he'd see me in it, and he goes, just stay in, man. It's like, there's no point in you getting out and going all around. So I'd go through like the maintenance bay, and then, hey guys, and then I'd just go back on the ride. Same thing in the Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean. They just stay on. You're not going anywhere.
That's funny. All right, we're going to do our next commercial break here on AMO Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you, and Kenny Rogers Jr. is our guest. I think I said that. If not, there you go. We'll be back with much more right after these important messages. Don't run away.
Can you even imagine switching back to pen and paper to run your business? Every year, we become more and more dependent upon our technology. If your network is not set up properly, you're just one click or one email away from losing data critical to your operation. Arizona Computer Guru offers a host of services to prevent and protect you from disaster. From online backup services to email filtering to fully managed network services, Arizona Computer Guru is here to keep your network secure, your data safe, and your budget in the black. To schedule your free consultation, call 304-8300.
This is Eb Wilkinson at Wilkinson Wealth Management. If you're within 10 to 15 years of retirement and you're putting off retirement planning, my advice to you is don't do that. Ignoring your retirement planning won't make it go away. It'll just make it worse. Give me a call and let's work on your plan together so you can retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
The Tucson Trap and Ski Club dates from 1948 and is now at 7800 West Ole Ajo Highway. The club owns 80 acres and leases 300 more from Pima County that supports 50 trap fields, 15 skeet fields, 2 5-stand fields, 2 sporting plays courses with 12 stations each, a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, 200 full-service RV hookups for members, and free Wi-Fi. This expansive facility gives enough room to host major national and international events annually, bringing thousands of people to the community. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSki.com.
Howdy, folks. This is Ray Benson of Asleep at the Wheel, and you're listening to the Voices of the West, of which I am one.
On Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, Harry Alexander, Bunker to France, Todd Roberts, and our guest, Kenny Rogers Jr. And I play that High Chaparral theme there, Kenny, because the France was in like 50-some episodes of that great television Western program. And he walks if I don't play it.
I was standing at the door.
He was actually.
To leave the room. Elvis has left the stage.
Anyway, that is another theme that I think was well done.
That's, I think, one of the great TV scenes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. I want to.
Go ahead. Big Valley had a great thing. A lot of great things.
Oh, yeah.
So, anyway, go ahead.
Let's get into the wonderful world of classic automobiles. Before we went to the live stream, you talked about how you had, you were able to get a replica of the car you had in high school. Talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day, I went to school in the late 70s and graduated in the early 80s. And a very hot movie of the day from 77, I don't know if anybody remembers it, a little thing called Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
So that, Trans Am.
I drove one of those cars that Hal Needham bought, two of them, one for him and one for Bert. And I came over from L.A. and picked up Hal's and drove it back to L.A. Oh, my God.
So I was, when I was in high school, the Bandit TA was really hard to get a hold of. It was the open grill, black with gold, and it was kind of a high-end thing, and they were priced significantly higher. The one that I ended up with was a 1979, which was a closed grill. And it was in this really pretty color called Nocturne Blue. It was a dark blue with a blue bird on the hood. And I kind of preferred that anyway. So I had that all through high school. And it was a snarling beast, and I loved it. And then literally maybe 6 or 8 months ago, I just kind of thought, gee, I'd love to get another one of those. And I found one, and it was the exact one I had. Not the exact one, but identical to the one I'd had with this light blue interior and all the details.
Cool.
And so I bought it. And I was, as I was saying, it drinks gasoline, it snarls and spits and roars, and it's incredibly slow.
But, how many speeding tickets did you get
in that car? It's funny you'd say that. Speeding, not a lot.
He got cited for going too slow.
Show of power and reckless driving, I got a lot of those. I got a lot of didn't need to go around the turn sideways tickets. I got a lot of didn't need to dump the clutch at the light tickets. Got quite a few of those.
They just don't have any fun, law enforcement.
The smell of burning tires.
I tell you.
So you have a number of other automobiles. You collect them. Do I understand that correctly?
I did. What happened was, I recently got rid of probably 5 of them. I didn't have a huge collection. I think I had 10 at one point, 10 or 12. And I've gotten rid of a significant number of them because, I loved looking at them, and then I would get in them and drive them 10 feet and go, this is terrible. How did people put up with this back in those days? And I realized there's people out there who are dreaming of these cars.
Yeah.
And eventually I had them covered in storage. I said, what's the point of that? They really should go to somebody who would love them. So I was very fortunate in each case to find a buyer who that's exactly what they were looking for. I had a 57 Thunderbird. It was white with black and white interior. And beautiful car. And every time I walked up in that car, I was just in love with it. Yeah. And then I'd get in it, and it would spit. And it was like driving a boat because it sat down in the back. And the steering wheel, you had about a quarter turn play before it actually did anything.
Yep.
So you go around the turn and you're spinning the wheel like crazy in the car, and then eventually responds. And it just drove me bananas. And so I put it up on an auction site, and I found a great guy out in Texas who his wife had one in high school, and she dreamed of getting it. And it was like my story. It was an exact replica of what she had had. So he bought it for her and gave it to her as an anniversary gift. And it's very sweet. I go, well, that's where that car should be, with someone who every day is going to love it and drive it. And, so,
what was your first car? Your first
My first car was a my very first car was a car that someone gave me because he hated it so much, and it was a
nice friend.
He knew I needed a car. I just got my license, and he goes, "Why don't you just take that piece of junk off my lawn?" And it was an old Jeep Cherokee, like one of the first ones. It was a jalopy, and barely got from A to B, but it was fun. And then I saved up some money, and I went to a dealership. And this is what kids do. I didn't think to go to several dealerships. Went to one.
Yep.
No, of course.
And then I said, here's what I got. What can I afford? And that was basically two cars.
Uh-huh.
And the one I bought was Fiat X19. I don't know if you remember those cars.
Yeah.
So basically it was the Ferrari GTS, but with half the engine.
Right.
But it was a mid-engine car, and it was made, with a lot of the same specs. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun little Sportster, little wedge-shaped car. And then I went from that to the Trans Am, because I was like, that's enough. It's time to grow up and be a man.
Yeah.
Man's car.
Man's
a man. That's way cool. My first car was a 1964 Simca with four on the tree. And and instead of where you'd see the Body by Fisher stamped on the door there, mine was Body by Ham's beer cans. I'd stop at the gas station and say, check the gas and fill her up with oil, will you? Because it burned big time. And I taught my wife how to drive that, and I don't think she's ever forgiven me for that.
My favorite.
They were little boxy cars, right?
They certainly were.
Favorite, when I got out of the Navy, I bought a 57 Ford Fairlane 500.
What a
beautiful car.
Yep.
All the 57 Fords were beautiful. I mean, the Thunderbird that I had was so beautiful. The Fairlane was gorgeous. And considered buying a Lincoln Continental.
Yeah.
Probably. I think they had just one. They were pretty big on sharing parts then.
Yeah,
and I almost bought a matching.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well,
almost bought a matching Lincoln Continental from the same era from 57.
Wow.
Because it was just so pretty. But then I realized I don't need these 57 cars.
That's when Detroit used to really do some designing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, instead of the plastic things they put out now.
My first car was a 72. Buick Estate Wagon station wagon with a 455. It was so long that when you drove it and you turned a corner, you had to make sure there was nobody in the oncoming lane coming from that same corner that you're turning, because they had to stop, back up, or get on the sidewalk.
Two time zone car, was it?
Yeah.
I was excited to say that. Yeah, those are the ones that you park in one time zone, the back's in another, right?
How many surfboards could you get on that guy?
Surfboards, I don't know, but I carried a lot of drunks around in that car. I'd pick up all my friends, and they'd make fun of my car, and I'd go, you guys ain't laughing now that we're all getting to where we need to go, are you?
It had the big rear-facing seat, too, didn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it did. Tailgate slid down into the back of the car.
Yeah.
those were that way.
Oh boy. And I don't
know. Those were great days growing up.
We certainly got off the mark on the interview and talking classic cards. I mean, hey, this is fun, man. This is what we're all about.
Did you have an all-time favorite?
You talking to me?
Did you have an all-time favorite car?
Well, a favorite car
did you name them?
You know what? I always, all my friends name their cars, and I tried to name them, and then a month later I go, I forgot what I named my car. So I can tell you.
Turn in your car keys.
Never stuck. I can tell you a car. This is kind of not really in line with the question, but it's, it kind of brings up. So all-time favorite. There was a car that I was madly in love with growing up. And it was the George Barris Batmobile from the 60s.
There you go, yeah.
I lived in Burbank, literally on the same street on Alameda, and I was early 20s, and I happened to pass Barris all the time, and they had it kind of darkened in the front; you couldn't see what was inside. So I went over there one day and just knocked on the door, and they let me in. And inside was the Monkey Mobile, and the Munster Mobile was in there. Mm-hmm. And in the back, they had two Batmobiles. And one of them was covered in velvet, and one of them was in the shiny black paint. And I asked him, I said, you know, I've always loved these cars. Would you sell me one? And he said, well, we use the black velvet one for shows and stuff like that. He goes, I could sell you the painted one. And I said, how much? And he goes, I don't know, $75,000. And, I mean, I couldn't give up $7,500.
Yeah, right.
Now, let's flash forward to 10 years ago, or roughly, when that same car sold for, I think, $4.5 million at auction.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, I should have sold some relatives and organs and bought that car. Yeah. But then that would have been me driving around in Burbank in the George Barris Batmobile.
Oh man, Barris was the top customizer of his day.
You know,
the top customizer.
What surprised me is I grew up with him, with knowing who he was, and when I went over there, he was just sitting in his office. And he came out and talked to me. I was a little starstruck, like, oh my God, I'm talking to George Barris.
Yeah.
And with him going, yeah, I'll sell you that car. Okay, thanks.
I got an opportunity when I was living out there to go down to Shelby's Cobra place out there. And he showed us around. That was such a neat experience. So to be there with the creators of these things is just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're passion projects for them. That's for doggone sure. We got to do our final commercial break here on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker de France, Todd Roberts with you. Our guest, Kenny Rogers Jr., and we're talking about all kinds of cool things back after these messages.
Arizona, the land of cattle, copper, and cowboys. It's also the true West, where a large number of Westerns were filmed. For your next vacation, come out to where Wyatt Earp made a name for himself as a highly respected sheriff. Stay where Jimmy Stewart filmed Winchester 73.
That would be the White Stallion Ranch. Situated in the mountains just northwest of Tucson, the White Stallion Ranch is an award-winning dude ranch with 43 guest rooms and the Hacienda. That's a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom home, perfect for larger families, family reunions, and girlfriend getaways. Every guest room has a private patio with views of the cactus gardens, mountains, or corrals. Generous floor plans offer sunny, comfortable rooms, but you won't want to stay in your room. Outdoor activities are plentiful at the White Stallion Ranch. Horseback riding, hiking, shooting, archery, rock climbing, e-biking, and a weekly ranch rodeo are among the numerous activities that you'll enjoy on your ranch vacation. Go Western for your next getaway. The White Stallion Ranch. Book your vacation now online at whitestallionranch.com or call 520-297-0252.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.
I'm Mr. Ed.
No doubt you've heard about rescue groups for dogs and cats, but did you know there's a rescue group for horses? That's right. It's called Horse It Around Rescue. Founders Steve Boyce and Teresa Worrell are helping out all those equine victims of neglect and cruelty by giving them a place to restore their health and wellness. And Horse It Around provides a nurturing and natural environment where horses can be horses, so they can be adopted out into forever homes. More than 120 horses, mules, and donkeys have been adopted out, but like everything else, it costs money to run the project. Horse It Around is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Southeast Arizona. Your tax-deductible donations to Horse It Around will go a long way so those horses can be horses. Check out the website, horseitaroundrescue.org. Make a difference in a horse's life. That's horseitaroundrescue.org.
Besides bringing millions a year into this community with national and international events, the Tucson Trap and Skeet Club at 7800 West Old Ajo Highway services the local shooting sports community with a 380-acre site featuring trap, skeet, five-stand, and two sporting clays fields, as well as a 9,000-square-foot clubhouse, which all is available to local shooters, and soon, an archery range. Check it out at TucsonTrapAndSkeet.com or take a drive out west of town and see it for yourself. New members or single-day use, welcome.
That was sure a good fight, stranger. No guy's gonna get away with slugging me. Watch me get him.
Look out!
Now listen, Roughneck. There ain't room enough for both of us in this town. And I don't aim to leave. You better clear out by sundown.
This is the Voices of the West.
Given that this is a Saturday program, it's fitting to play the Saturday Night Rag.
Yes.
Bill Boyden is Cowboy Ramblers. Welcome back to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West. Harry Alexander, Bunker to France. Todd Roberts with you. Our guest is Kenny Rogers Jr. And it's time, Kenny, for all that shameless promotion, self-promotion now.
Yeah.
So what is what's coming up for you?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, I'll sit back and let them do what they got to do. Oh, you're talking about me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not really. That's a great question. I'm busy all the time. I do some writing and production, music writing production, and artist management out of Nashville. So I've got a couple of new artists I'm working with. One kid's just amazing, and I see big things for him. I've been doing voiceover for about 25, 30 years.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's
Rogers.
A lot of fun.
Hmm.
That's exactly it. Yeah, it saves a lot of explanation. There's a lot of times. So a little funny side story. Years ago, my dad and I did a TV movie together and called Christmas in America. And we were doing radio interviews for it. And my dad, a lot of people don't realize that he had a little bit of a high voice. You know, it was an exciting time in the Old West. He kind of talked up here. And I tend to talk a little lower. So it got confusing. They would say, Kenny Jr. And I would say, yes. And they'd say, oh, no, Kenny Jr. Like, no, that's me. So what happens is people would expect me to have my dad's voice in voiceover. And I just realized the Ken thing just saves me a lot of... it allows me to go in more anonymously and be a more diverse voice.
Well, speaking of bands, I understand, I'm hoping that he still does, that your son Kenton has a band called, what is it?
Keaton, yeah. Keaton has a band called, and my other son Casey as well. Keaton is the lead singer, guitar player, and my other son Casey is the drummer. Band is called Raised on TV. And it's what you would call this youthful. Yeah, I know. What does that say about me as a parent? I love the name, but at the same time, like, I don't remember just parking you in front of the team.
Uh-huh.
You guys are in Little League, okay? Don't start off with these rumors that I wasn't around and you grew up on you know Pee Wee's Playhouse. Don't do that to me.
Leave it to Beaver, the Partridge Family.
I was raised on those shows, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I had a neighbor, Danny Bonaducci, I didn't get along with him personally at the time, but I loved the show, and he was my favorite character, and I remember seeing the show and loving him.
Kid, yeah.
And then seeing him in person, like, oh, that guy and I don't get along. I'm sure he was fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was just me. One of my other neighbors was Chris Knight, was Peter Brady, on the Brady Bunch. Same kind of thing. Same kind of thing. I would see him as Chris, and I didn't really know him very well. Mm-hmm. But then I would see the show, and he's my favorite Brady. So very L.A. Very L.A. to be able to differentiate between the characters and the actors.
So you're doing. You're doing music. You're doing voiceover work and some writing, mm-hmm. and you're basically keeping yourself quite busy.
No wonder he's getting
cards. You know, I've always been. I've always been what they call a multi-hyphenate. You know, I've always had several careers going. I'm working with some folks on some television stuff that I can't really divulge yet, but mm-hmm. it could be very interesting when it breaks, and it will break. We've had some meetings the other day.
Harry and I are available.
We're available.
Thank you. I didn't want to have to ask. So you saved me the trouble.
We work cheap, too.
Okay. Well, I didn't want to have to ask that part either, but...
All right, let's get down to the basics here.
The most important part of the show.
Your favorite mm-hmm. Western movie or television show?
My favorite Western movie or TV show, you're asking. I love the movie Silverado. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. I can go back to the old Westerns. You know, I think I heard of the commercial Winchester 73. Mm-hmm. I love the show. I loved... You know, I mean, the 50s and 60s, everything was a Western. So I grew up on Bonanza reruns. Mm-hmm. I'm actually at this, not at this very moment, but as of today even, almost finished watching Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
And it's just great to see, you know, young Steve McQueen mm-hmm. getting his start there. Mm-hmm. And he was a master of pulling focus off of the other people on the screen.
But he couldn't ride.
I mean, just any... but he could. Well, I mean, he'd run it. If you never ever noticed, he never used the stirrups to get on the horse. He'd just jump and land on the saddle and then stirrup up. And that's impressive. But
that would especially with the guys that can't ride because they spend too much time trying to get the foot in the stirrup, so it just it works better for them.
See, I never thought of it as a handicap that he's doing it because he can't. It's a time wizard, but that's a very good point.
Kenny, we're going to deviate from our typical question, which we've asked you now, but we need to ask part B, your dad's favorite Western as well.
The Gamble.
His favorite Western. You know, that is a great question. I will tell you a little inside story. One time we were on vacation, he came up with the idea of renting a house in Mexico and bringing the family down and so on. So we were down there for about a week in this lovely little house that he rented. And one morning I get up, and surprisingly enough, he's up very early. He's sitting there, and I go, "What are you doing?" He goes, "They're showing all the Gambler movies in a row." "Are you going to watch them all?" He goes, "Yeah, I haven't seen these in forever." And he sat there all day, the whole day, and watched all the Gambler movies. And the funny part was, he's laughing. He's having a great day. He's like, "Oh," he said, like he was fully engaged. So I'm going to say the Gambler movies were his favorite.
Okay. I've got a question for you. This, I just dawned on me. A good friend of mine worked with your dad. He doubled him, and he was stunt coordinator, Dave Cass. Did you ever get to meet Dave?
I definitely remember the name, and I'm sure I saw him. I'm sure he helped me. He was probably there on Rio Diablo and probably with my rubber rifle. But I definitely remember the name and him being a part of all of it. Absolutely.
Oh, great.
Wow.
How cool. Man, this has been a great hour.
It went by like a whiz.
I know. It's a great hour. Good stuff, man. Interesting, very interesting individual.
Yeah.
You know? And
very diverse.
Yeah. Can't keep a job.
No, you can't. Or a car. Can't hold on to a job or a car.
Kenny.
That's true. Ouch. That's true.
But I will tell you this about Kenny.
You've got a great sense of humor, Kenny.
I will tell you this about Kenny, and this is, I'm going to blindside him a little bit. I can tell you that he's a great dad, because I know his daughter, Victoria, and she is a first-class gal.
All right.
First class.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I appreciate that, and I appreciate when people give me credit for my kids. They're all really great people. I'm so proud of them. But I always point out that I could steer them somewhere, but the choices were ultimately there. So I don't look at Victoria and take credit for her being great, or Keaton or Casey. They're just great people because they made good choices when they were laid out before them. So
you gave them
those were their paths.
Excellent.
All I could do was lead them to water, so to speak.
Very good, and you got them to drink. Yeah. Kenny Rogers Jr., thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
And, hey, man, anytime you got something shaking, let Todd know, let us know. And
we'll plug you.
We'll plug you. Yeah, we won't charge a penny. We're pretty good at that stuff.
Wow, all right. Well, then definitely, I'll take you up on that. Right. Guys, this has been absolutely so much fun. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
You betcha. Our pleasure. Thank you. Next time we get together on Emil Franzi's Voices of the West, our guest is Jerry Robinson, author of Cheyenne Story.
78, 79, 80 O's, all you gamblers out there.
So long, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Emil Franzi's Voices of the West.